You're listening to the Beauty Brain Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
I'm Randy Schuler, cosmetic chemist and member of the National Association of Science Writers, and I'm here with beauty biz bon vivant, Perry Romanowski. Hello, Perry.
Hey, Randy. Geez, how many years are you going to hold that National Writers Association of Science?
Forever.
Nice. Well, it's good to be back on the show today.
Well, on today's show, we're going to tell the audience about some bogus baby bedtime products, how you can get rich by using talc powder, and a new natural anti-aging breakthrough. But before we get to all that, I do have something I'd like to share with you in the audience.
Yeah, what's that?
I received an email this week from a new fan of the Beauty Brains who said that she had been following you on your other website, Chemist Corner, for years, and she had just recently stumbled across the Beauty Brains. Now she's a huge fan of the show. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, no, that's f***ed up. Now let me tell you why. So you're telling me that someone can follow your escapades on Chemist Corner for multiple years and never once hear you talk about the Beauty Brains?
I mentioned the Beauty Brains.
This is wrong on so many levels. I mean, look, I may scoff at Chemist's Corner on occasion, but at least I bring it up, and, you know, any publicity is good publicity. So,
sure.
So I suggest that maybe, you know, you send a message out to your followers and your Chemist Corner fans, tell them what they're missing right here on the Beauty Brains. What do you think?
Well, I agree. Maybe I can play up the Beauty Brains a bit more. It's a different kind of audience, though.
Well,
they're chemists.
They're just waiting to become Beauty Brains fans, apparently. So
they are, anyway. Clearly. Well, we appreciate fans from all avenues that they show up to our show. So if you have a show, feel free to talk to your audience about the Beauty Brains.
Yeah, you're still not getting off the hook. All right. Okay, but I'll postpone my rant for now because we've got a lot of beauty science news stories that we need to get to.
Incidentally, do we now get an explicit labeling on our podcast? Or swearing.
I actually checked the iTunes rules. You can bleep out explicit content in the podcast, and that's fine, but you can't bleep out explicit information like in the title.
Gotcha.
Which I thought was interesting. So anyway, so we're good to go.
All right. Well, this is a story I think I read this last week, but we didn't get to it, so
yeah.
Let's bring it up today.
Yeah.
You know, cosmetic marketers are always trying to innovate. Sometimes I think they take this a little bit too far. And this new innovation from Shiseido seems to be one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
According to a report in Cosmetics Designs, Shiseido. I keep saying Shiseido. It's Shiseido, right? How do you say it?
I say Shiseido, but I think this was... Wasn't this on your list of names that are pronounced wrong in the industry? So I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with Shiseido. Let's see what our audience says, right? So
I think our audience doesn't give a crap, but all right.
Anyway, they've developed some music software that supposedly enhances the power of touching the skin. They call it acoustic beauty care. Now, they say that when sound is introduced to the process of treating skin, it improves the experience and allows the customer to appreciate the comfort of skincare and the feel of cosmetics even more keenly. So I guess that would mean if you listen to music while you put on your cosmetics, they would work better, right?
I don't know what that means. That makes no sense to me. So
I mean, to be fair, it doesn't seem like they're claiming that it makes the cosmetics work better. They just say that it can improve your overall experience by listening to certain types of music while you're getting a treatment.
Well,
I mean, it doesn't sound like a huge surprise, I guess, right? Because, like, I mean, if you're in a spa and they're playing death metal music, you're going to have a different experience than if, you know, it's soothing water drops and soft violin undertones.
So, okay, so the breakthrough news story you're sharing with the audience is that if you listen to soothing music, it can make you feel better. That's the bottom line?
Well, I mean, the lesson that we can take from this is that if you want to have a better experience while you're applying your cosmetics, you should play some music. And, you know, that sparked an idea. you know, we here should release our own Beauty Brains music application, right? So, hey, oh, you have a guitar. No, I have a ukulele. But I think it would go something like this. Like, so when you're putting on your makeup in the morning, you just like... Putting on your makeup this morning, it's fun. So I'm thinking we could do a whole CD of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm guessing we would sell a ton of those.
Yeah, or we'd get sued by Shiseido.
I don't quite know how to recover from that, but let me try by talking about this new iPhone app that I saw.
Yeah.
So, you know, I loves me my smartphone, and unfortunately, though, when it comes to beauty apps for smartphones, we haven't seen many that really provide a benefit, and the one that always comes to mind is that mole-detecting app.
That's
I mean,
right,
not only did it not work, but it could actually be downright dangerous because you could misdiagnose a skin cancer if you use this app. But
I think it got cracked down by the FDA.
It did, right? Indeed, it did. But I did find one iPhone beauty app that may really be helpful for your health. So I don't know if you remember, I think 2 weeks ago I talked about a breakthrough from L'Oreal about their pump packaging. So this one also comes to us from the fine folks at L'Oreal. Today's show brought to you by L'Oreal. No, I'm kidding. You know, I'm kidding. I don't want to get any more emails saying that we're in the pocket of big beauty. Don't those always crack you up, though? Like, somebody actually said to me in an email that we're not credible because we're in the pocket of big beauty. So what people don't seem to understand is that most of the time we're pointing out that these products don't really work very well or that they're not worth as much money as big beauty is charging. So if the industry is secretly paying us to say those kind of things, then the industry is pretty stupid.
They're doing a terrible job.
Good Lord. All right, anyway, back to the story. So L'Oreal has developed a UV radiation detecting patch that works with your smartphone. Now, it's called, cleverly enough, My UV Patch. And it's this tiny, thin, stretchable patch that has photosensitive dyes in it backed with a layer of electronics. So it's fairly sophisticated. So as the patch absorbs UV radiation through the day, it changes color. And then when you want to know how much radiation your skin has been exposed to, you snap a picture of the patch with your phone, and the app decodes your total UV exposure. Wow. And, I mean, I presume it gives you some kind of context like, you know, now you've accumulated enough exposure to begin damaging your skin or whatever. Maybe it gives you, it's an indication to reapply sunscreen. I don't know. But, we've seen this color change technology used as an indicator of UV exposure before. I think on packaging, I think one of the sunscreen companies even makes a little doll that changes color after it's been out in the sun for a while. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, the problem with that is it's tough to do it accurately because reading a color shift can be very subjective. So it looks like the electronics built into this patch maybe help calibrate the camera to give you more consistent reading. So it seems like they've taken an idea that hasn't really been fully developed and built this into something that could really be helpful. Now, at this point, L'Oreal hasn't said that if this is going to be a standalone product that you can buy or if it's just going to come, free with purchase with probably one of their sunscreens. But it'll be interesting to see how they make this kind of wearable fashion so people don't feel like an idiot when they're wearing it. I think that's the trick to make it catch on. Yeah. But I was really intrigued. It sounds like it really could be helpful.
Yeah, it's very interesting technology. I don't think they're ready to get it out there on the market yet because it seems like it's a big patch, a big sticker on the back
right,
of your hand.
Yeah, exactly. They've got to make it fashionable.
Exactly. Maybe it's something that could be as an add-on to like an Apple Watch.
There you go.
Or something like that. There you go. Well, big companies like L'Oreal are where you're going to find these types of innovations. But you know what? I was reading a Women's Wear Daily brand. I was reading a Women's Wear Daily article. And they talked about the top 25 power brands, and there were some surprises to me. You'd think this would be dominated by big companies,
P&G, L'Oreal, sure.
The list is dominated by big companies, but I was interested in some of the brands. So let's just go through some of the top. I'll go through the top 10 of these, and then maybe we talk about some of the other ones that are on the list.
Okay.
Number 10 is Lancome. This is a prestigious beauty brand, and it's ranked number 2 in U.S. sales. Now, this list that Women's Wear Daily put together was that's what they call their power brands. That's not based on any one rating. Like, it's not based just on sales or just on your footprint in the internet or something like that. It's sort of like, I know you're a big college football fan and how they have... this is college basketball
season. But college and football? I don't understand.
So anyway, in those sports... The sports writers, they have rankings, and they give power rankings to the teams. And it's not based on, like, win-loss record per se. It's just based on... All right, let's go. Number 10, Lancome. Number 9, this is a surprise to me, was Dove.
Oh.
Dove, this brand increased their value 10% in the last year.
Hmm.
Next, number 8 is Estee Lauder.
Okay.
It's an oldie, but a goodie. It's the third largest prestigious U.S. brand.
Hmm.
Number 7 is Benefit Cosmetics. Hmm. You know, apparently they are one of the best on social media.
Interesting.
Number 6 is Maybelline New York. It's another old brand, but somehow they've remained youth-oriented. They apparently are really strong with search engine optimization, too, and they rank number 2 on the digital rank index.
Hmm.
Number 5 is Urban Decay. Apparently they killed it last year with the release of their Naked series of palettes. Mm-hmm. Then another surprise here, number 4 is Neutrogena. Apparently beauty editors love this brand, and they're winning in mass market. They have, like, you know, four of the top products in main categories.
I don't find that one that surprising. They've got good technology, and they do a good job with claims and execution, so not surprised to me.
Number 3 is Chanel. Mm-hmm. Just goes to show you that old doesn't mean irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's been around, 100 years or something, right? It's been around forever, but it's still the number 1 fragrance player in the U.S.
Hmm.
Number 2 is MAC, and this makeup reigns supreme, and MAC is the king. They are the top prestige-ranked color brand in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, most people just say MAC.
Really? All right. And finally, number 1, and just more proof to the naysayers that we are in the pockets of big beauty... L'Oreal Paris. They have top 10 sellers in 13 different categories: hair care, skin care, makeup. You know, they've got it all, and that's why they are number 1.
Well, well done.
Now, a surprise to me was our old brand, Tresemme, comes in at number 20.
Hmm.
Above Olay, above Revlon.
Oh, that's pretty good then.
And who doesn't even make the top 25 list?
Hmm.
Pantene.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. I mean, again, I don't quite understand the algorithm they use to rate these brands, but it can't just be sales.
It's not just sales. It's sales. It's growth. It's your footprint on the internet.
Yeah.
So they just fell right off. That's just really surprising to me, because when we were working in the biz, Pantene was just the 500-pound gorilla, right?
Yeah, but that was... I mean, back in those days, there was no digital footprint, as an example. So maybe that's a brand that didn't evolve with the times very well.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next story. What would you say if I told you that blackberry and dill extracts are effective anti-aging ingredients?
I would say liar.
Well... That's, and I wouldn't blame you, but I saw this study published by Johnson & Johnson that shows these materials may actually increase elastin in your skin. So first, a little bit of background. Remember that elastin, along with collagen, is responsible for creating the scaffolding of your skin, right? It's these fibers that give skin its structure, you know, holds it up so it doesn't collapse and form wrinkles. Now, creating new elastin is complicated, and it involves 3 key processes. So first, we'll do a quick bit of biochemistry here. So first, you have to increase the production of the components that make these elastin fibers. These are things like tropoelastin and microfibrils.
Yeah.
Second, you have to increase the levels of enzymes that promote the cross-linking of these fibers, because if the fibers don't cross-link, then they don't set up the right structure in your dermis. And then third, you have to decrease the enzymes that break down elastin. So if you can do those 3 things, you should have more elastin in your skin, and therefore it should be more youthful looking. Less wrinkles, less collapse. Okay, now, These researchers at J&J hypothesized that blackberry leaf extract could decrease these bad enzymes that I just talked about, and that it could boost the production of tropoelastin. Wasn't that the mouse on the Ed Sullivan show, by the way?
Boy, you are dating yourself, because I've never heard of that.
Topo-G-Joe. There's like three people in the audience who'll get that joke. But anyway, all right.
And to you people, I salute you.
And they also hypothesized that dill extract could increase LOXL1, which is an enzyme that does the cross-linking that I just talked about. So they...
Are you sure that's not a text message?
LOXL1. So then they did some tests, first on human cells in the lab, to validate this hypothesis. And they showed that the blackberry leaf does indeed inhibit the bad stuff that breaks down elastin. That's this human leukocyte elastase and these matrix metalloproteinases that are called MMPs. You see those talked about on some of the higher-end beauty brands. And they also showed it actually promotes new elastin formation. Then they cited some other test results. I don't know if these were theirs or not, but it showed that the dill extract did increase both the good enzyme and the actual elastin production. So the point there is they have some data that validates this theoretical mechanism of how this stuff could work. So you see they're kind of working their way through the Kligman questions, right? There's a theoretical mechanism. They validated the mechanism. Then they did the key piece, which is they did a clinical study on real people. Okay. So they applied a combination of these extracts to people's arms for like 12 weeks, and then they looked for increased elastin under actual use conditions. And they measured that elastin increase in two ways. First, they looked at actual tissue samples to see if more elastin fibers are visible. And then they measured skin elasticity using a cutometer. And that's kind of an indirect measure of elastin. But if you can show the skin's more got more bounce to it, that's a good indication that there's more elastin there. So in both cases, they found positive results. So, I mean, this is really about as robust as it gets in the cosmetic world, right?
But you didn't mention, was that a double-blind study?
It was, yeah. Double-blind placebo-controlled study.
So
well done. Now, I do have a few questions or issues that need to be answered yet before I'm all in on this. I mean, first of all, the clinical data appears to all come from a single study that was fairly small. It was 49 people, okay? Mm-hmm. Second, in the data that I saw, they didn't always show whether or not the results were statistically significant. And in the case where they did show statistical significance, only one of the results, the one for net elasticity, was significant at the 95% level, which is what we look for in studies. The other one was significant at, I think, 90%. So that just means we're less sure that the results are reproducible and not just a fluke. Right. And again, that's why you do large multiple studies to narrow it down. And then third, there's no context for these results. So, you know, was this degree of improvement consumer perceptible in any way? I don't know if this is, it's hard to know if this is enough of an improvement to mean anything to anybody.
And right.
There's also no indication of how these results compared to other elasticity boosting ingredients. You know, are blackberry and dill, you know, 10 times better than, let's say, peptides, which are proven to have some of the same functionality? Are they much worse than other ingredients? So, you know, I mean, it's always nice to have a natural alternative, but I wouldn't want to, I'd want to know if we're sacrificing efficacy just to get to naturalness.
Right.
And then finally, you know, it's hard to say how this discovery might translate into a finished formula. The level of extracts that they used that showed, you know, really impactful results were pretty high. They were like at 20%, sometimes even, you know, 40, 60% of the extract itself. Now, you know, your run-of-the-mill product with a pinch of blackberry and dill, there's no way they're going to provide these results. Now, you know, maybe they could optimize a formula around high levels of extract concentration, but again, it's fairly uncommon. So I'm really optimistic they may be onto something here. It's certainly interesting, but I'd say there's some more work to do before I'm convinced these are the next anti-aging breakthrough ingredients.
And the other thing that makes me a bit more skeptical, too, is that this is published by a company, and I'd like to see an independent group sort of replicate this result. And so that's why whenever I see some evidence from somebody who works at a company that's trying to eventually sell a product, I'd like to see a second study done by somebody independent.
Sure, sure, sure. But again, you know, compared to usually what we see for, you know, extracts in anti-aging, this is light years ahead of that. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, J&J, they are a pharmaceutical company, so they do have the PhDs and the experience and, you know.
Yeah,
so
they do good work.
They're more credible than a lot of companies when it comes to this kind of thing. Have you seen the hot new trend sweeping the nation, Randy?
What's that?
Rainbow freckles. Now, while women used to hide their freckles, some are now embracing and enhancing them with a colorful version. They use pencil eyeliner to create faux freckles with all the different colors of the rainbow. And you know the trend is catching on because model Kendall Jenner posted pictures of herself on them on Instagram. Yeah, you can see what I'm talking about by searching Instagram. Do a hashtag rainbow freckles and hashtag colored freckles to see it. And now, I think what this really means is that the beauty brains, we need to get on an Instagram channel, and we need to do a rainbow freckle picture too. So, Randy, can we get you? I'm asking, me and the audience is asking you, can we get you? Get on Instagram with a rainbow freckled look.
I'd rather put burning cigarettes out on my skin.
So you're not saying no.
Let's see. Of the two beauty brains, which one is more likely to do some wacky endeavor on the internet? I don't know, Perry. It sounds like it might be your wheelhouse.
Ah, boy. Well, it's good to see kids are experimenting with cosmetics these days.
God. That's it?
That's it. I thought we were going to talk. I really want to talk about these babies not going to sleep. So.
All right. I'll tell you what. I will do that story next. But first, let me read two iTunes reviews very quickly.
Oh, great.
I don't want to forget about these because we always like to give a shout out to people who take their precious time to help us promote the show. So I've got two this week. The first one comes from Mashville, who says, "These guys helped me see past all the hype to make my own informed decision. Yay, science. Many people mention their banter isn't so great. Well, they're not the Tappet brothers, but not everyone is."
But we're willing to learn.
There you go. And then Gabtract says, "I'm in school at the moment studying to be a cosmetic chemist myself, and this show was a great find. I love how informative and fun these guys are, and they make me excited about my future career." So, well, thanks to both you and Gabtract. Good luck, right? Like, if you get in the industry, you know, shoot us a note. Let us know where you are and, you know, if you can share any secret information that your company might have.
Absolutely. We won't share it.
All right, so let me get to this baby bedtime product story. So in what now seems to have become a regular segment for the show, I've got a story about another lawsuit against a cosmetic company.
Wow.
This one comes to us from right here in Illinois, and it's against the company we were just praising, Johnson & Johnson. So a woman is suing them for not putting her baby to sleep.
Like? The people from the company were supposed to go to their house and put the baby to sleep?
Well, let me explain. So according to the article, this woman has filed a suit claiming that J&J's bedtime bath and lotion products are making misleading claims. She says that she bought these products after seeing ads that claim they are, quote, clinically proven to help babies sleep better. So this benefit was so important for her that she was willing to pay a higher price for the products. They're priced at about a dollar above other J&J baby products.
All
right. So she bought the product. She followed the use instructions and found out that they did not help her baby sleep better. So, of course, the next logical step would be to sue.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. By the way, there's a proposed class action lawsuit in New Jersey for the same reason. So I don't want to get bogged down in the legal issues here. I just want to talk about the claims. So when I first read this, I'm like, they must be misconstruing what they said. I can't imagine J&J is actually claiming their products, you know, help a baby sleep better. That seems kind of crazy, but actually they do. So but here's what their website says. You have to read the wording very carefully. So here's the quote. "Sometimes babies have trouble sleeping. This three-step nighttime baby bath routine is clinically proven to help your baby go to sleep easier and sleep better through the night in just 7 days. Asterisk." And then the asterisk leads you to this statement. with a bath using Johnson's baby bedtime bath, a gentle massage using Johnson's bedtime lotion, and a few minutes of quiet time, you can let your baby drift off to a better night's sleep. Make bath time a gentle and calming time with natural calm essences that blend aromas to soothe your baby. Okay, now, and I'll put all that in the show notes so you can read the wording yourself, but that wording is very important. They're not directly claiming there's anything about the product itself that's sleep-inducing. What they're saying is that if you follow a specific routine, which, by the way, uses these products,
sure, that
will improve sleep. Now, that seems like a much more reasonable statement than saying the product has some sort of narcoleptic effect on infants.
Well, you can imagine how they clinically prove this,
well,
right?
And that's exactly what I'm going to get to. By the way, first I should point out that, you know, the ingredients in the product are very standard. It looks just like the rest of their standard baby products.
Which are perfectly good products.
Yeah, nothing wrong with the products, but it's not like it includes some sort of, sedative, you know.
Right. It's the baby downer.
Right. So I figured, you know, somebody must have done a study on the effect of bedtime routine on baby sleep, and sure enough, I found one referenced on WebMD. So here's what they say. I'll put the link in the show notes, but it was a study involving 405 mothers who had babies between 7 months and 36 months. And they showed that babies who followed a nighttime bedtime routine went to sleep easier, that they slept better, and that they cried less during the night. And the study was all about standardizing activities. They said you should do things like, you know, play quiet games with your baby, make every activity peaceful and calm, bathe them right before bedtime, and so on. So the routine had nothing to do with using special products. And, you know, who knows, maybe J&J ran their own version of the study using their products. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but there's nothing here to suggest that one type of product would work better than any other, and J&J is not claiming that. They're just saying if you follow this routine, your baby should sleep better, and apparently there's science to back that up. Now, you know, from a claim standpoint, I think they're in really good shape, if it was up to me, except for one word.
Really? Which word
well,
is that?
Well, if you read what J&J says on their website, it says, clinically proven to help your baby go to sleep easier.
Oh, the your baby.
Right. Now, if they had said clinically proven to help babies sleep better,
right,
I would say no problem. But, you know, what did they do? Break into people's houses and watch their babies sleep? I mean, the specificity that comes with the word your certainly could make the claim seem more misleading. At least it opens up a little bit of wiggle room for somebody to come in and challenge them because they were so specific about it being your baby. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how these lawsuits shake out, but I was surprised that there was any science to this, and apparently there is.
So wait, you're telling me if you have like a set routine rather than like a chaotic thing before the baby goes to bed, it'll sleep better?
I know. Wow, I know. It's shocking new information.
The things you learn here.
Interestingly, it didn't say anything about playing death metal before they put the baby to sleep.
Hey, you know, it's a tough time to be J&J, apparently. They recently got slapped with a ruling that said they have to pay $72 million in a case that linked their baby powder to ovarian cancer.
Oh, ouch. By the way, today's show not brought to you by J&J.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the pockets of Big Beauty, huh? Anyway, a Missouri jury awarded the money to the family of a woman who died from ovarian cancer. She had brought the suit claiming that using J&J baby powder was the cause. Now, her son took over the case after she died, and he said that his mom used the baby powder every single day for decades. And even though there is no scientific evidence supporting the notion that talc can in any way cause cancer, the jury still reached the conclusion that it had. I gotta say, this is really frustrating to me. I mean, what are juries who have no background in science being asked to make judgments like this about science? It's just really frustrating.
Well, and now back up, because I did see the headline, but I did not get a chance to read the article. So,
yeah.
So I'm doing this from memory, but if I recall correctly, there are concerns about talc causing cancer. Specifically if the talc is contaminated with certain type of asbestos fibers. And this has been known for a long time, and there are, you know, purified grades available, so it's not an issue,
right.
but there is a basis. So is this where all that's coming from?
I mean, I think that kind of fear-mongering is where it's coming from. But even though in the cosmetic industry, they use, you know, pharmaceutical-grade talc. So right. it's not an issue. And it's not the talc that is related to the cancer. It's the asbestos in the talc, right?
Well, okay, but that's yeah. You're splitting hairs a bit finely there, right? I mean, if obviously this doesn't seem to be the case, but if a company was selling talc that was contaminated with asbestos and you got cancer from using that, there would be some liability, I would expect, for that company.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like that's the case here at all. I'm wondering if maybe they just saw that, you know, those earlier reports that are from, I think, decades ago, if I remember correctly, and then they're just projecting that to say that's still a problem, which seems... again, not very responsible of the jury to do that.
Well, one of the key pieces of evidence that was introduced in the trial was an internal memo from J&J. They had a medical consultant who suggested that, quote, anyone who denies the risk between hygienic talc use and ovarian cancer would be publicly perceived in the same light as those who denied a link between smoking cigarettes and cancer. He goes on to say, denying the obvious in the face of all evidence to the contrary. So,
what?
At least this medical consultant believed there was a risk. So, which just goes to show you that, you know, even medical consultants can be misinformed on topics, right?
Well, I mean, I feel like we're a little over our skis on this one because if there's enough information on this that at least one consult, I mean, what's that based on? I mean, there's.
It could be his misunderstanding of that. You know, I don't really know. I mean, I've got to figure J&J is going to certainly appeal this, right? There must be something more to this than just the science. But because I think the science is on J&J's side, right?
Yeah, well, as far as I know.
Incidentally, for all the natural... ingredient lovers out there, talc is a natural material. It's not synthetic. And, this really, I think it's going to be appealed. It'll probably be overturned. But can you imagine what would happen to the industry if this isn't? I mean, anybody who has cancer can bring a lawsuit against any company and possibly get a settlement, right? Because this lady is claiming that this particular thing, this product, caused her cancer.
Right.
Now, there's no way you could prove that, right?
Yeah.
Because anything could have, you know, any number of factors could have caused that cancer. But here's a company that's being held liable for a specific case of cancer. It's just, I just don't see how any company can really sell cosmetics anymore if you're liable and you're able to convince a non-science educated populace that some ingredient in your product caused their cancer. Mm. I think it's scary times, my man.
All right. Well, speaking of time, we're out of it for today.
Oh, there we go. And I didn't even get to read a book today.
No. Well, that's all right. We'll let you do two book plugs next week. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. Very good. All right. Well, thanks, Perry, for another great show. Thanks to everybody for staying tuned and listening to us. And come on back next week. And until then, be brainy about your beauty.